Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Friday, May 8th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, what world are we living in?
Well, it's the only one we've got.
Is it really? I want another one.
Well, there may be another one later, but...
Well, I don't want that one yet.
Well, it's not so much a matter whether you want it, but whether it wants you. You know, that's what we have to be concerned about.
Well, I guess earlier today nobody wanted gold, but it is coming back a little bit. Yeah, we had a little bit of pressure on gold with the jobs report. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. And stock market loved it. It was up 260 points from the get-go this morning, and it just looked like the number froze. And it was going to be there. It was going to stay there, and there wasn't anything that was going to change it. They typed in those numbers, and they went on vacation.
Maybe they spilled coffee on the keyboard or
maybe,
something.
Maybe. Maybe it adjust. Stuck them glue or something sticky, yeah, and they couldn't change them. Maybe. But gold today is up $4 at $11.89 in the New York spot price. We have silver up 15 at $16.55. Platinum was up 10 at $11.45, and palladium was up 20 at $8.03. A little reversal on the dollar, up 0.24 at $94.78 in the index. Crude oil up a little bit. Everything was happy and green today. $59.41 for crude oil. And the paper markets today, as I mentioned, 266 to the upside, 18,190. The NASDAQ back over 5 by 3 points, 5003, up 58. S&P 2116, up 1.3%. 10-year yield, 2.15. I was hovering around those levels. The euro is 112, and we had the big surge in the Dow and in the markets. Two reasons, I believe. England, the UK got who they wanted, and that was David Cameron. And it's not going to be a long, dragged-out situation that they were expecting that election to take. It was a pretty cut-and-dry election for him in the parliament and for his party. And so there was a little carryover from those markets. And then, of course, our jobs Great news. The U.S. economy added 223,000 jobs. However, I think one of the most important parts of this report today is the revised March down to 85,000 from 126. So we thought 126 was bad. Well, they revised it down to 85,000 for March. So I think if they would have, anybody viewed that, probably would have overshadowed the 223,000 jobs in April. And in the past 3 months, employers have added 191,000 positions, but it's still well below last year's average of 260. They did drop the unemployment percentage 5.4 from 5.5% in March. That was by the Labor Department. Wages, they rose just 3 cents in April.
And, 3 cents.
3 cents.
Woohoo.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
But they have risen 2.2% over the past 12 months, but that is roughly the same pace of the past 6 years. So, you know, not a lot of big increases there. The mining industry, of course, with the drop in oil, they cut 15,000 jobs. It's fourth straight loss. Oil drilling, of course, has fallen sharply after the plunge in oil prices. Manufacturers, they added only 1,000 jobs. And after the flat reading in March, the industry's average last year was 18,000. So a big drop there. And you could say a lot of it is due to the stronger dollar, because that makes the U.S. exports cost a little bit more. You can use that if you'd like, other than just to, hey, our economy is not what it is. Construction companies, they picked up some of the slack. They added 45,000 jobs, and the most in 16 months. And, of course, the healthcare industry gained 56,000 jobs. I didn't see any numbers as far as what the government employed. So it seems, people, consumers, the Americans, we're going to have to come up with a new name for Americans other than consumer and combine the two. They're stepping up their spending on restaurants and retailers and banks. That grew at a faster pace in April than in March, and that was also according to a survey by the Institute for Supply Management.
So it's difficult to know. I mean, there's some optimistic. There's a feeling, an increased feeling of optimism out there, but I wonder whether it's reasonable. I wonder if that increased optimism is reasonable and likely to sustain itself for, months or year or whatever.
I mean, that's a huge...
Or if it's, hot today and cold tomorrow.
Oh, that's a pretty huge spread between 85 to 233. So you'll have to see if they don't revise it downward this month, next month.
I understand.
Because everything you follow, I mean, you the only thing that is looking good is the consumer getting new credit cards, and they're out there spending it. So you have spending and tuition. So how good is it? Yes, people are out there spending, but what are they spending it on? Tuition. So it is one of them. And automobiles. So, and it's not our reports that we come up with this information. You go to the government websites, you read them, you put them together, and you can, read between the lines, and you can see that one and one is not equaling two.
Well, that's the strange thing about this. We seem to see an improvement in public sentiment, and it's demonstrated by at least some people are going out and borrowing money and spending it, despite the fact that the number of jobs created was diminished for March and likely to be diminished, despite the report we've had, likely to be diminished for April. And there's a disconnect between public sentiment and what appears to be the fundamental condition of the market. And we again wonder whether the improved public sentiment, will that generate enough confidence to restore the markets to some degree? Or will reality of the fundamentals in the markets, will that attack public confidence over the course of the next months? So it's kind of interesting, just because there is a disconnect. People are saying, yippee. And it's a little bit like dancing in the salon on the Titanic after you've hit the iceberg. You know, the drinks may be free and it may be a great time to party and the rest of that sort of thing, but, you know, there's other things happening that you should be paying attention to besides the music and the free liquor. So, again, well, we live in interesting times.
Well, then one thing, hold on a second, I just lost it. One thing we can rejoice about, the Fed's collected a record $472 billion in taxes in just 1 month.
Yeah.
So.
But it was April. I mean,
it doesn't matter. I don't care if it was, you know.
Well, it's tax. That's when the taxes come in.
I know, but it's still a record. And
yeah,
it's still $472 billion in 1 month. It's just wait. I mean.
Well, I think they pointed out, I saw that article. I didn't clip it, but I saw that article, and I think they said they usually pull something like $225 billion a month. So what we're talking about is we've got double what is usual, what the usual take is. Which means they've got enough to keep them going for an extra 2 months right now or whatever. One month's more revenue than they usually collect. I don't know. Is that cause for celebration? It's better than a poke in the eye. That's for sure. But on the other hand, it's not really that much.
Well,
you know, they were handing out $80 billion a month during quantitative easing 3.
But the sad part, Al, is there's still a deficit. I mean, $470, you know, almost $500 billion. We're still running a deficit. So it just goes to show you how out of balance everything is, how bankrupt the country really is. But yet people, we just sit here and, you know, they force us, they make us, they demand. We just sit here and we just
go out and get a
open
credit
our
card,
wallet,
spend some money.
Go out and spend some money.
I mean, what the heck? You know, on one level, if the banks, you know, it is a little bit. You can compare the banks to the bartender on the Titanic after they hit the iceberg. They're handing out free drinks, you know. They're handing out free credit cards, in a sense. That's an exaggeration, but you can borrow now and collapse later.
Well, here's...
Will we necessarily have to repay the bills if we borrow now, Melody?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I'm just reading this. So this week, Congress cleared a GOP-written budget for 2016 that would boost defense spending using a budget trick to get around limits imposed around the sequester deal, blah, 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 blah. Social Security has risen 4% this year, and Medicare has risen 8%.
You mean that the amount that they have to pay out?
They don't.
You're not talking about revenue. You're talking about how much they're spending on.
How much they're spending?
Yeah.
But the biggest leap has been in Medicaid, and that's the federal-state partnership that provides health care to the poor, which is up 22%.
Did they give you a number, or just a percentage?
It's 22% or $36 billion.
$36 billion up 36
over
billion
the previous year. Yeah.
Over the previous year, well, that's. I don't know, something like, that's not even 10% of what they took in April, though.
Overall, the government has taken in $1.89 trillion in revenue and spent $2.18 trillion through the first 7 months of the fiscal year.
Well, all I can say is, I guess, whoopee.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it on the program on a regular basis. For me, the big factor, the thing that I'm able to, at least I think I'm best able to understand, is the dimension of the national debt. And again, talk about we're getting more money in. Well, that's nice, but how much do you owe? You know, they admit to $18 trillion that they owe on the national debt. Again, Williams says it's close. John Williams at ShadowStats.com, he says it's closer to $100 trillion. And the Congressional Budget Office and James Kotlikoff, economist James Kotlikoff, they say it's over $200 trillion, including unfunded liabilities. Those debts can't possibly be paid. We've got a shot at $18 trillion. But even $18 trillion works out to something in the neighborhood of $55,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. Family of four, fair share of the national debt that they admit to is over $200,000 for a family of four. Where are we going to get that money? You know, families don't have it. Even if we spread it out over a period of 10 years. It's conceivable, but we'd have to increase taxes by $5,000 a year, something like that, per person. Family four would have to pay an extra $20,000. No, they wouldn't. In any case, just what I'm trying to get to, at the $18 trillion level, we might be able to pay it, but it would be a painful experience. But the rest of them, if it's $100 trillion, no way. Not going to happen. $200 trillion? Not going to happen. Not possible. And for me, that's the fundamental reality in this whole system. Sooner or later, someone's going to have to admit that we are technically bankrupt, or at least the government is. It owes more money than it can ever possibly repay. And when we get to the moment where somebody's got to say, oops, guess what? We're bankrupt. That's when some real trouble is going to start in this country. How long we can avoid that moment, I have no idea. But it's really, the moment is here. We're too far in debt to ever pay off the debt, to repay that debt. But we are not yet at the moment where we admit that. Huh? And paradoxically, as long as we don't admit it, kind of like that bumblebee that an aeronautical engineer studied, and he studied, measured all the wings and the, you know, the body of the bumblebee and the weight and the rest of that sort of thing, and concluded that bumblebees can't fly. Well, the bumblebee, it's like me saying the government is bankrupt. The bumblebee continues to fly, and for the moment, so does the government, but in this particular instance, the day is still coming when you have to face up to the fact that they can't fly, they're out of change, they're going to wipe out the correlative debt instruments. When you wipe out the debt, you wipe out the paper debt instruments that are being used as assets right now. Those will all be repudiated. And, you know, you take an $18 trillion national debt, even if that's all it was, if that debt had to be repudiated, it doesn't just knock out the debt, it knocks out $18 trillion worth of paper debt instruments that people are treating as assets. When that $18 trillion in paper assets disappears, and people say, oops, we can't pay the debt, therefore those $18 trillion in bonds are now worthless, what happens to the people in the pension funds and the whatever that are using those bonds as collateral and as assets? They get wiped out. This is such a terrible mess that we're sitting in, that we're sitting at least next to and maybe in, when we can, it continues, it persists, despite reason, right? Or at least it would seem to be despite reason. And all you can do is sit there and say, look, this can't go on forever. And when it gets to the point where people say, this is it, this is the end of it, those of us who've stored our wealth in the form of paper debt instruments are going to lose our assets or a big chunk of them. And those of us who stored our assets in something tangible, like land, tools, guns, bullets, toilet paper, gold and silver. All right, got something tangible? Okay. You will have some of your wealth. Got something paper? like I've said a bunch of times, I hope it's soft and absorbent, because that may be the only use you're going to get out of your paper debt instruments. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I'd like to encourage the listeners, if you'd like to give us a call, on 1-855-566-3738. That's 855-566-3738. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about our deficits, and do we, is it too big to be paid? And, you know, Pat Buchanan, I like the way he writes, and he wrote his latest article was a fast track to national ruin. It was about the TPP agreement and the fast track. And, you know, he talks about the trade deficits, and I mean, the first quarter of 2015, in the 6th year of the historic Obama recovery, the U.S. economy grew by 0.2%. And he says that probably sugarcoats it. And if you look, for trade deficits to subtract from the growth of GDP and the U.S. trade deficit, that just came in. It was huge. It swelled. The U.S. trade deficit in March swelled to the highest level in more than 6 years. The March deficit was $51.2 billion, largest of any month since 2008. In goods alone, the trade deficit hit $64 billion. A surge in imports, $239 billion in March, reflected greater shipments of foreign-made industrial machinery, autos, mobile phones, clothing, furniture. This is the stuff that we used to make here in this country.
And how did we lose that? And when did we lose that?
Well, we were losing it for a long time, but the greatest came from the great sucking sound that Ross Perot said that all these free trade agreements at that point in time, it was NAFTA.
But the point I'm trying to make is that this has been catching up with us for a long time. And it's not something that just happened under the Obama administration, for example. This has been persistent through most of your lifetime and mine. When I was a kid, again, we were the wealthiest country on earth. We were the principal creditor. We loaned. We had something like 7 of the world's 10 biggest banks were in the United States. We were the principal lender to the world. Now we're the principal debtor. We're the principal manufacturer. Now we're caught in this consumer economy. And we're not manufacturing to the same extent that we're consuming. And that's another one of these fundamental problems that's going to come back and haunt us before this is all over. But how did we get into this predicament? And it's because one generation after another of politicians, regardless of whether they are Republicans or Democrats, have been effectively working to destroy this country. That's what's happening. We're going down the toilet. We are going slow. We're not going like, you know, you just pull the lever and everything moves at one time. But nevertheless, we are going down the toilet. We have been going down the toilet. And we are going to continue to go down the toilet unless or until the American people start to realize the biggest problem you folks have is Republicans, with the possible exception of the Democrats. Neither one of those parties is doing what's best for America. In my opinion, I mean, the only glimmer of hope we see, in my opinion, are the Tea Party members in the Republican Party, which the rank-and-file Republicans, well, at least I don't, not rank-and-file Republicans, the majority of the Republican politicians, the leadership of the Republican Party, they are aghast that we have Tea Party people that are pushing and forcing the Republican Party to do something other than treason. But the Democrats, they don't even have a Tea Party in the Democrats. They are engaged in treason. Republicans are engaged in treason. And you folks are engaged in waiting for the SS Titanic to sink. We didn't get here just because of one party. We got here because of both of them. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to throw them all out and look at a viable third party. And if we're not prepared to do that, I mean, God help us if we elect Hillary. I mean, all I can say to the America is, look, if you folks are dumb enough to vote Hillary into office, when it all hits the fan, don't come crying to me and say how unjust this is. You want to vote for Hillary? You're going to get it. You're going to get it good and hard. And what can you say?
Well, we got Jim from West Virginia calling us. Thank you for calling us, Jim.
Oh, thank you for being there to call. Mm-hmm. Alfred, if you can refrain from interrupting me, I have a few things.
Well, if you can get to the point.
I could get to the point. Okay,
right.
But there are several in a row. Okay, after World War II, North Carolina was still in the throes of the Depression. The war industry didn't do them much good. So North Carolina legislators got together and says, we will not tax businesses except for those services they use. If you're in a city, city police, city fire, okay. We won't tax businesses. West Virginia, on the other hand, because I've done heavy-duty studies, I'm talking about 50 hours worth of study in these different states around here because so many people left the state. West Virginia says, we'll take the coal severance tax instead of investing it to cut taxes because they came up with this plan. We'll have a coal severance tax, invest it, and then we'll get rid of all state taxes. No, the politicians, all we can buy votes. Here, let's make social programs and let business pay for it. We won't invest properly. We'll just buy votes with this money. Well, by the time the 60s rolled around, West Virginia businesses were leaving. By the time the 80s came around, all businesses that could leave West Virginia left West Virginia. The only thing left were those who processed and packaged raw materials for shipment out of the state and those who served those who stay. And God knows how many editorials I wrote about all this trash. North Carolina, on the other hand, I went down there in 69 to deliver some stuff to a fellow going to Duke University. Two lanes around the Research Triangle, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, and I can't remember the third one. And they were building everywhere. Well, a few years later, there was a six-lane highway around the Research Triangle because North Carolina says no business taxes except those the business uses. Now, then all the rust belters moved in, and now North Carolina is a good study of a New World Order, socialist-leaning, miserable mess. The number one cause throughout all history, it's not trade deficits caused by the NAFTA gap. It's, we need tariffs. That's the wound.
Mm-hmm.
The cancer is the fact that we have taxed and regulated and driven our insurance, our businesses nuts. My liability insurance to operate rather high-tech industrial instrumentation controls, robotics, all that jazz, went from $600 a month, it was $200 a month in surrounding states, to $3,000 a month because of one sweeping court decision. www.got-sued.com. All right? And this includes false flags. I'm 100% convinced that that lawsuit was a false flag. The insurance company decided they wanted more money. So they got together with a couple of attorneys, and I know who they are, and a judge, and said, oh, here, we're going to take this little lawsuit and blow the insurance wide open in this state. They want to kill, steal, and destroy more than make money. So, there was a fellow named Greg Hicks. He had a motel in Cross Lanes, West Virginia. He had surveillance cameras in the lobby. Some guys in the lobby were doing something they shouldn't do. He fired them. Based on the surveillance tape, there's no audio taping. And so the guy turned around, countersued for $500,000 and said that Greg Hicks had violated the West Virginia Wiretapping Act. There was no audio recording. Wiretapping is with audio. He got $500,000. So what that was an excuse for the insurance company to jack their rates through the roof. And I happen to be in a niche category, and I lost my liability insurance, period. But every time they do something, a business tax, it only serves to A, increase cost of production, B, decrease availability, C, suppress wages, D, increase unemployment, E, drive the business out of the taxing jurisdiction or out of business. And there's one other point I've got to make to cap this off, because you all talking about, you know, the United States of America, all capital letters, is corporations, most bankrupt, the largest corporation in the history of the world. When it goes bankrupt, baby, ain't nobody going to buy it out. It is toast. Our government is T-O-A-S-T. Gone. You might as well get out the butter to jelly. Okay, I've made my points.
Well, you know, one of the things you're talking about is I saw a statistic that I found hard to believe, but it seems consistent with my recollection of the 1950s. And that is that back then, a quarter of the people who were working in this country were self-employed.
Yep.
They had their own little businesses. I can remember one guy, Heisler's Bootery, down in Crystal Lake, where I grew up in Illinois. I mean, this guy had just a little shop, and he fixed shoes, all right? And I remember Jim Roden had the picture frames, and my stepdad had an excavation business. And people were self-employed. They could do the job, but they can't do all the paperwork that the government has laid on them, and that's what you were talking about. And as a result, now it's something like 1 in 25 workers is self-employed, and the balance of them are working for someone else, and that's not a formula for prosperity. Why are we in that position? Because government has regulated us to the point where we can no longer be self-employed. Well, do the job, just can't do the paperwork.
Let me give you another one. There's a fellow who had a chemical mix business, especially detergents, release agents, lubricants, processing chemicals, what have you. He was going broke in West Virginia, and it's a much more interesting story, but I'm going to skip all the details. I helped him relocate because he brought me his cost analysis and his market analysis. I shipped him off to various different accounting types in three states. He moved to Virginia. He was going broke in West Virginia. His second year in business, he cleared $1.5 million, and he gave it to his employees. Now, if you have a medium of Cheryl Ladd, a reporter at Daily Mail, did a study, and she sent me some raw data. But if you own a medium-sized coal mine in West Virginia, you'd pay $1.5 million in taxes and rules and fees. If you had a medium-sized coal mine in Kentucky, it was $250,000. If you had a medium-sized coal mine in Virginia, it was $100,000. Now, would you prefer to be a millionaire or go broke? But now, when you compare states, particularly those that are close to each other near the same market, then you can see the damage that business taxes do. But that is our number one problem. And number
it's not
two
just
is
a question
tariff.
Of business taxes, though. It's also the regulation, which is
yes.
a variation on the same idea. But it's not just the taxes. We might
oh,
be
yeah.
able to deal with the taxes, but the regulations are ruinous. They're incomprehensible.
Alfred, just to work in the coal preparation plants, for instance, I had to take a course, a day-long course, on how to park my bulldozer to strip mine. Okay, yeah, it's the rules and regulations and the insurance and the lawsuits. So every time you take a swat at a business, all you're doing is killing the economy. Now, right now, I guarantee you, I spent a day, well, about 6 to 8 hours a week, one-man shop, on paperwork. A yep. nice lady who I'd known forevermore had a music store, she and her husband, three-person operation, and they had teaching for teaching studios. She spent 3 days a week doing paperwork. And that is the load. It can increase the cost of production, decreases availability, drives down wages, increases unemployment. And
saps your attitude, your optimism, your hope. It wears you down. People want to do jobs. Heisler's Bootery, the guy liked to fix shoes. All right? He didn't like to do paperwork. All right? You like your business. You don't like all. Let me just do what I'm doing. Government gets in the way, and we are being destroyed by our government. That's what's happening.
I got
and
a
it's
zinger for you.
That's what we talked about earlier. It's been going on for a couple of generations.
I'm going to give you a zinger. My dad, there was a fire in my dad's house, January 15th, 1992. Fire damage. Now the fireman knocked out all the windows to put the fire out. They did a fabulous job. I could not believe how they got that under control. It was fire damage. There were like 30 charred studs or what have you. The rest was fire damage. I tried for 4.5 years. Now, well, here's the deal. I do believe a property developer wanted those 2 acres in the nicest part of South Hills, Charleston, West Virginia. But for 4.5 years, I could not get a building permit to replace the stinking windows. And I ended up tearing
four and a half years?
House. Huh?
4.5 years?
4.5 years. I couldn't get it past the building commission. Had different contractors going in there. Oh, you don't have a big enough insurance license or whatever. Well, basically, one of the ladies said, you won't get a building permit on that piece of property. He said, well, you put that in writing? She said, no. Now, that house was evaluated at $225,000 in that condition, and I had to tear it's 8,500 square foot house, nicest part of Charleston. I had to tear it down and cost it $20,000. Now, if that doesn't destroy businesses, I could have put 6 apartments in there. So this like in West Virginia, if you have a rental house, you will pay twice the property taxes if you have a regular house. If you have a car which you use for business, one for personal, the business vehicle, more taxes. Everything, telephones, everything. Now, it's a Rockefeller playground, too. It's the only state in the Union which has lost population since I was hatched in 1951, born, whatever you want to call it. But this is what happens. You have a state-by-state macroeconomic study. And that's the number one. And if you want rural economic development in your area, get with the sheriff, say, hey, IRS, you ain't coming here no more, bud. Hey, DEA, leave. Hey, Department of Agriculture, pound sand. And you can do
it with
all
corporations.
I'll tell you another one.
We ought to have a law where the federal government can't interfere with any business that doesn't make at least $500,000 a year. That would mean small businesses would just be exempt from federal regulation. I don't have an objection. One ride herd on the big corporations, fine. Let the little guys, just leave them out of the heart. They can be regulated by the state, but keep the feds off their back. We're going to have to take a break right now for some commercials. Melody and I and perhaps James from West Virginia will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom, and Jim from West Virginia may still be on the line, and we are talking about how the government has essentially driven small businesses out of business, and it's not an accident. I mean, we see it with the regulations. If you've got some brilliant idea, background in chemistry, biology, whatever, you set up something in your garage where you come up with a great new product, pharmaceutical product. What do you think the chances are, Jim? I don't care if it could extend everyone's life by 100 years. You get an extra century of life if you use this product. Somebody building this. Big Pharma will not allow it to happen. The government won't allow it to happen. You will be regulated into oblivion, and it's never going to. People aren't going to get any benefit out of this. It's not an accident. They want everyone to be worker bees on the hive, and only a handful of corporate executives, and the rest of us can all just be in bondage.
Let me explain some of that, and I'm going to put two bookends, and now I'm going to shut my trap. But, folks, look it up on Dun & Bradstreet. The FDA is a private corporation.
Mm-hmm.
It has been rumored that they get 30% of their funding from Big Food and Big Pharma. So everybody keeps missing the elephant in the room. It's the corporation issue. They're all corporations. They can be put, they're racketeering corporations. Now, so is business taxes, rules and regulations, insurance rates, and plain old corruption. You have two music stores in one town. if one of those guys is politically connected, they can drive the other one nuts.
Yep.
I did not buy a radio station because I found out that if I put certain Patriot broadcasters on, I'd be driven nuts. I did not buy it. It was about 15 years ago. But taxes, rules, and regulations, insurance insane because of lawsuits, insanity, and plain old corruption. Now, the other bookend is very simple. This whole deal, the IRS is a private, now offshore corporation. They have no more right to collect taxes than Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
VATF&E is also private, offshore, now Puerto Rico corporation. They have no more right to steal guns than your corner gas station. And to put it very, very simply, the EPA is a private corporation. They have no more right to shut a power plant than I have.
Let me give you one. Have you ever seen the President of the United States and or his spokesman standing at a podium in the White House, and behind them you see a blue oval on the wall behind them, and it says the White House? Right? Most people don't realize they are telling you that the White House, and we found this on Manta.com, which got its information from Dun and Bradstreet. The White House is a private corporation. When you see the president standing there, the sign behind him says the White House. He's not speaking as president of the United States. He's speaking as a representative of this corporation called the White House. And again, that was from Dun and Bradstreet. Pardon me?
Oh, and it was this jerk named Alfred Adask who told me that in his blog, and I dropped my teeth when I first read that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, surprise, surprise.
Another zinger. I think mm-hmm. it was President Ford getting sworn into office. I used to have these publications like the Spotlight, predecessor to American Free Press. I'd get them for a couple of years and drop them. Had a picture, I think it was Ford being sworn into office, a picture over the shoulder of the Chief Justice. And the oath of office was typed out in all capital letters.
Yeah.
You swear to defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States of America, the United States of America, in all capital letters of corporation. The Constitution for the corporations is a uniform commercial code, folks. It's right in front of you. Now, if you're just listening, there's no difference in sound if I say United States of America in upper or lowercase letters. But there was a photograph. You would think that the Chief Justice could memorize a stupid oath of office, wouldn't you? And the guy taken it out. But he had it written out so they can do their legal skullduggery and say, see, it's a corporation.
Yep. Yep.
Folks, I would love to see somebody put out a bumper sticker that says, you trust government? And put three question marks after it. You trust TV? Three question marks. Folks, I've run my mouth way too much, but I hope this opens people's eyes to how things really work and what can be done.
And it is treason. I mean, there's no proviso for the problems we're talking about. There's no proviso in the Constitution for government to set things up this way. They have done this in order to enhance the power and the income and the control of government at the expense of the American people. It's not an accident. It's not good intentions that are a little bit, they've gone out of, they're a little out of control or unanticipated effects from certain causes. No, they're doing exactly what they want to do. They are taking this country down. And that includes your favorite congressman, ladies and gentlemen. That includes your favorite senator, your favorite president. It's difficult to say that. It's difficult to believe it. But nevertheless, they are all in it. Now, there might be 5 or 10 that aren't in it and out of any given Congress, but that would be about the limit in my judgment.
Well, Joe Alexander has done a tremendous, Joe from Arkansas, has done a tremendous study on the free trade agreements, and I sit there every time he comes on, I listen real close. But yeah, that's the wound. The cancer is the business taxes, rules, regulations, and corruption, all this. And what it boils down to, folks, is we can turn around parts of it locally, but the national government, there's no choice. It must go down. Ain't nobody going to bail it out. So get ready. Now, we sound like a broken record, food, water, means of protecting it, gold, silver, tangible assets, but this is real, folks. So if you don't believe me, go look them up on Dun & Bradstreet and do the research, and you will be shocked if this is new to you. Thank you for letting me have your platform.
You're welcome, Jim. We appreciate your calls. All right, what else? Thank you. That's Jim from West Virginia, and he'll be back next week probably. We'll watch and see. I've got an article here from Bill Holter, and it's entitled, How Long Will It Take? And he's talking about a Greek default is inevitable and only a matter of when. He predicts that there will be significant adverse consequence because he believes that the reality, although the Greek debt is allegedly $350 billion or in that vicinity, he thinks the reality is 10 times that amount. But he says even he figures it's at least double. If they default, 700 billion euros are going to disappear. He thinks this might be enough to tip the whole system. Maybe yes, maybe no. But he points out that there are scores of potential problems that can function and that give us a little of that domino effect where one domino falls, and because the whole thing is so precarious, next thing you know, vroom, you've got hundreds or thousands of dominoes falling. And he says, forget about timing. He says, we don't know when things are going to break down. It could happen next month. It might not happen for a couple of years. Nobody really knows. Or at least if they do, they're not telling. The only people who could possibly know are people who, if there is such a thing, if there's a conspiracy or people in positions of power says, okay, we're going to pull the plug on in September 2015. Well, maybe that's true, and maybe that's just a conspiracy theory. I don't know. Sort of thing I'll never know. They would be the only ones who know, if anyone knows, and they're not telling. You and I don't know when we're going to see this thing go south. And what Holter is talking about is in his article, he says, forget about the timing. He says there are people who think they understand what's coming. They understand we're going to see a serious problem. There's going to be a dramatic fall in the stock market, for example. We might see some sort of a collapse in the bond market. There are things that are going to happen that almost everyone listening to this program, you already know, yeah, it's going to happen. We don't know when. And what Holder's saying, forget about trying to time this with the idea of you'll be smart enough to wait until the last possible moment, and then you'll get out of the stock market with whatever money you've got. All right? You'll make your profit. You'll get out right at the last possible moment, and you're going to be golden. Well, he says, once, if you are in the stock market at 1 minute before midnight, meaning the time when the whole thing goes south, he says, even if you get your money out, where are you going to put it? Are you going to put it in the bank? Are you going to invest in bonds? What are you going to do with your money if you're waiting to the last minute and you are brilliant enough to see, you know when the whole thing's going to blow up, and right before it blows up, you make your move. All right? Now you've got your money. Now what? He points out that your capital may be out of stocks. All right? You were in the Dow Jones. Now you're out. You got out at the last moment. Okay? But your money is still within the system. And his argument is looking at the precious metal timer. That's a term he's using. He says, assume people are perfect in their timing. They get their order in. The broker confirms it. But will there be time to transfer good funds? Will the metal actually arrive in people's hands after the stuff hits the fan? And the point he's making, which I think is valid and valuable, is that don't wait for the last minute. Don't bet that you're smart enough to just kind of hang out in the Dow Jones, invest in the stocks, and you'll be one of the few who knows exactly when to get out. He says, look, just get yourself in position where you want to be. Get there now. He says Greece, again, is only one of potentially 100 or more flashpoints that can push the system into the same heap of disaster. And when's it going to happen? Nobody knows. But, again, we are on that Titanic metaphor comes back to us. And you got to put that life jacket on. You've got to get close to one of the lifeboats. It may be that the Titanic has not yet sunk, but nevertheless, there's a high probability that's what's going to happen, and it's only sensible that all of us act in advance to protect ourselves. Don't dawdle. Now is the time to make your moves, get your cash, turn it into gold, silver, land, bullets, guns, whatever it is you think is reasonable. But you're going to have to get your cash out of the system, because if we are correct, and I can't give you a prophecy and say for an absolute fact it's going to happen, but it certainly looks as if we're going to see a systemic collapse. The existing system is so overstressed, it's so irrational, that when it goes, it's not going to be just a small thing. It's going to be everything. All right, it's like a crack in the dam. At least it might look like, well, we've only got a little crack in the dam, just a little water coming through. But once you get a little water flowing through that crack, that whole dam is going to go. And when it does, you better not be downstream. You better have got your removed your water, your boat, whatever. Put it wherever it's safe. And he's again, his argument is, don't dawdle. Don't wait. Now is the time. Get ready. It's better to be, you know, even a year too early than a minute too late. So, what else, Melody?
Well, I'm glad he agrees with us as far as not knowing the time. And that's one thing also I agree with him, where people don't understand. People will be pulling their money out. They will be waiting till the last minute. But it's human nature. As much as we encourage them not to, get prepared, get positioned. And what will happen in the gold and silver market? You're going to have everyone flooding into the gold and silver market. Product is going to disappear. And we all know there's a lot of dealers out there that people will be sending their money and they'll never get their product. Both gold and silver are small markets. Product disappears very quickly, and we've seen this in brief periods of like we did in 2009 and 2010. I mean, heck, I couldn't get off the phone fast enough before prices increased. And on $20 gold pieces, I would hold, put people on hold, lock in their price, and by the time I got back to them, prices increased, you know, $15, $20. I mean, it was incredible. Product disappeared. We saw what happened with the Treasury. And there's going to be dealers out there. Oh, we have the product. Just send us your money. And it could. Many people will get stuck. So get positioned now. Get the product while it's available. You have a choice. You have quality product available to you. And that's what it's all about.
I've got, you know, for those of you who want to trust in the market, here's something from Europe. Earlier, the headline is Flash Crash. Swiss stock market goes from 9,000 to 400 in 1 minute. Trading halted. That happened earlier this week. It regained most of the losses in relatively a few minutes as well. But if you're going to live in a world where you're going to invest in markets where you can have flash crashes that can wipe things out that fast, you are living in a world where one of these days you're going to have a flash crash and it's not going to recover 95% within 15, 20 minutes. It's dangerous. Get yourself protected now. I'm Alfred Adisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye. I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.